You are listening to Adda, a Transfin podcast. These are 15-minute conversations to achieve a singular objective, that is, to intrigue, amuse, and nudge you into thinking a little deeper. Also listen in for some riveting icebreakers. Do subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google to get that nice little notification every time an episode goes live. Hi, folks. Today, we discuss about the increasing use of surveillance cameras and facial recognition technology around the world. Moving on, we chat on how vocational courses are paying much higher vis-a-vis an engineering or MBA degree. Hi, Sudhanva. How have you been, bro?
Hey, Simi. I've been good. The weather's becoming really cold.
Like, yeah.
The vibes of winter are finally
here. Yeah, Christmas vibes are also setting in.
Yes. I'm guessing it's a very big deal for your family, right?
It is. It is, bro. It's the only thing that we have. Like, all year we wait for this Christmas holidays to set
in. Sweet. So, right. Like, what plans for the big day?
We'll probably visit our grandparents. I mean, let's see. We've already done a couple of carols and all in Delhi. But
So, like, every year, do you guys, like, have, like, a big Christmas tree plan? Like, do you guys buy a tree every year?
We try to do that. I mean, the tree and the crib which goes along. We try to do stuff like that. But yeah, right. So, Sudhanva, what are we going to talk about today?
Oh, yeah. So, what I had in mind was the security camera industry in the world.
Right.
So, if you see around the world, the usage of security cameras is increasing day by day, right? So, around the world, as of now, we have between 700 to 800 million such devices around the world. And according to this recent analysis, by 2021, this number will cross 1 billion.
Okay.
So, there'll be 1 billion security cameras in use around the world. And the top two countries that are leading in this industry per se...
Wait, let me guess. China and US.
Very good. You're very smart, Simi. Exactly, yes. I mean, China, of course, is like a given because China, I mean, you know, it's China, right? So basically, in terms of numbers, China has as of now, around 560 million such cameras.
Hmm.
And that's, in terms of rate, that's around one camera for every four citizens.
Okay.
Now, what's surprising is the US also has a similar rate.
Hmm.
That's partly because the US has a lower population,
right.
but then at the same time, the very important distinction is only around 3% of the cameras that are used in the US are done so for the purposes of, you know, like surveillance and so on and so forth, right? Like almost all of them are used for purposes of, you know, like crime and private security, and they're also bought by private firms.
Private security, right?
Yeah, while in China, the vast, like almost all of them are used by the government to, you know, for the purpose of city and state surveillance.
Right.
Yeah. So,
and state surveillance, as in this goes beyond like just traffic control. Like, I think last time we spoke about CCTV cameras at traffic lights and junctions, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so
this goes beyond those.
So the chief intentions behind the use, of course, are things like crime and tackling things like terrorism and breaking laws and all of that. But if you see in a place like China, it's also to curb things like dissent, you know. Like, for example, in the western province of Xinjiang in China, these cameras are used increasingly to ensure that there is no anti-state activity.
Hmm.
And it is basically practically a surveillance state there.
Oh, okay.
And it's also like used similarly elsewhere in the country to ensure that there is no anti-state activity while at the same time curbing crime and, you know, like, you know, keeping crime in check. So China is a pretty big deal because it's also the biggest exporter of security camera tech. So on like the top companies that are involved in this business are all Chinese,
right.
And around 40% of all security camera tech is exported from China,
right.
By China.
Right. Does Huawei also have a role in that?
Yes, I mean, of course, right, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a pretty big deal. Like there was this survey by this firm called Comparatech.
Okay.
And among the top 10 most surveilled cities on earth, among the top 10, 8 of them were in China.
8 of them were in China. Where the rest two?
The other two were London and Atlanta in the US.
Okay.
And in terms of India, the top city was Delhi,
right,
which was at number 20.
Okay.
Quite low, but still quite high as well, right?
Right.
And the rate was around 9.62 cameras for every 1,000 people.
Right. And I'm assuming it's only going higher in the next couple of...
Of course. Yes, it is. So basically, as I
it's
said...
It's high up on the agenda, even on the Delhi government. But as far as I have read, it's premised on more security, women security and traffic regulations.
Traffic regulations and also ensuring that, for example, if a child is kidnapped, one way of tracking that child down or tracking the kidnappers down is security camera infrastructure,
right,
and also the application of facial recognition in these cameras. Right. Now, talking about this, China is actually building what could be the world's biggest facial recognition project ever.
Okay.
So basically, it's trying to install this tech in every security camera everywhere in the country.
Right.
So basically, imagine a system that can identify every citizen in the country with almost 100% accuracy.
Right. Sounds like a Black Mirror episode to me.
Yes. It's almost dystopian in nature, right? In fact, there was this article in South China Morning Post, right? So apparently the Chinese government has the facial data of almost everyone in China. And the size of this data is around 13 terabytes.
Yeah.
And it's very amazingly appalling, because just think of it. There are so many hard drives that are around 10 TB. They're the size of our palm, right? And imagine the data of everyone in a country as big as China in the palm of your hand.
Yeah.
It's just so appallingly dystopian in nature.
Right.
And also the usage of such things is quite varied as well. For example, in China these days, they use facial recognition tech and security camera footage to, for example, let you into an examination hall without an ID card.
Okay.
Or, allow you to board a plane without a boarding pass. Or maybe pay for your order at KFC without having to actually, show an ID or anything as such. In fact, there was this one, there are some places in China where based on your facial features, you might get a discount on something you buy.
How does that work?
Yeah, so basically if, for example, your face is very quote-unquote symmetrical or very attractive, you get a higher discount than someone with, say, a quote-unquote big nose or a very tiny nose.
Ouch.
Yes.
A little racist, but fine.
Yeah.
Okay, just struggling to understand here is, how is this really problematic? I mean, the way you have put it just sounds to me like it's just a new up and coming happening technology. I mean, just to just be... See, just like an movement towards payment wallets and more. No, if I'm saying a movement from digital, from cash, right?
Yeah,
so a movement to a more digitalized world it's a more positive movement than a more surveillance.
Yes. But the thing is, there are several factors. One is the accuracy aspect of it. Even the most accurate tech is around 90% accurate. And even then, it depends on the tech. If it's really good, it's so-and-so. It's around 90% accurate. But let's say you have subpar technology used. It has lower levels of accuracy. And just think of it. You are identifying someone as a criminal. And that this person might not actually be a wrongdoer if your tech is not completely accurate. And the second factor, of course, is the issue of privacy. Anyone who is always under surveillance would not be a free agent. They would not really act freely as they would if they were on their own. And the third, of course, is the danger of such technology being misused.
Right.
This issue was really controversial, for example, in the US, where several towns and districts have already banned it. But in China, of course, even if people were not very happy with it, it's not like they can petition the government to change it. Yes. So basically, the threat of misuse of such sensitive data is always present.
Right.
And China is already experimenting with installing the world's biggest facial recognition technology. And the same is being done in India, where the government has opened for bids the so-called automated facial recognition system, the AFRS, and the deadline for the bids will end in January of next year.
But just talking about this, I recall reading an article recently which spoke about how Chayos, I think, one place in Hyderabad or Bangalore.
Chayos.
The tea chain, uh-huh. Right? And I really love that brand.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, they have installed FRT technology in some of their outlets in Hyderabad or Bangalore. And
how would that work though? I don't get it.
The idea behind it was that the outlet claimed that once they recognize what a customer usually orders,
yes,
they'll probably, I mean, they'll just hasten up the process of ordering and I mean paying the bill and all of that.
That's very Chinese.
It's still a very nascent technology, mm-hmm. but I mean, yeah, since they've already told us that China is going to bombard India with all the new technology, probably just going to get more intensive there.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite dystopian, but then seeing as it's a growing technology, it's like a very growing field.
Yeah.
Depending on like what kind of law India would pass in the future, that would in a way determine the future of FRS in India or FRT in India.
Makes sense.
Yeah, but it's a very promising sector. Like, you know, almost every sector in the Indian economy is now in the, you know, now in doldrums with the economic going down and everything. It's a very promising sector in terms of jobs and everything else.
Yeah, more jobs.
Yeah. Right.
So, speaking of jobs, I just recall this recent article I read in the Economic Times. It spoke about, you'll be just surprised to know this, it spoke about how vocational courses just earn more, much people who have done vocational courses are making much more salary than someone who has done like an engineering or BTEC, engineering or MBA course from tier 2 or tier 3 college.
They are earning more.
They are earning much more, right?
Really? Huh.
And yeah, so I just have some numbers also in front of me. And the report said like engineers per month from like, mind you, I'm talking about tier 2, tier 3 colleges. I'm not talking about the creme de la creme like the IITs or IIMs, but those rest of them. So an engineer would ideally make like 41,000 per month. An MBA graduate would make anything around 42,000. But someone like a lab technician, like all vocational courses, like a lab technician or network. So a lab technician would make something around 43,000. A network technician can make as much as 51,000, right?
That's like with 1 year of experience.
That's around 4 to 5 years of experience.
Okay, but then such a person would be earning a higher amount than an engineer or an MBA grad.
Yes. In fact, a slightly older report published in the Quartz in around April 2016, it noted how, as per a study by Asocium, only 7% of the graduates passing out of Indian business schools are actually employable, right? And there are over 5,500 business schools in India right now.
My God.
Yeah.
That's right. A big number.
It is.
Yes. Right. And employability is quite a low factor there.
Right. I just recall here that Sudhami, even you had a degree in BTEC, right?
BE, right. Bachelor of Engineering.
So, yeah. I mean, just want to ask you there, how did you make the transition from a BE degree? It's a professional degree. How did you make a transition from there to like being an editor at Transfin?
When I entered engineering, two things. One, I didn't even know what I wanted to do with my life.
Right.
And second was, you know, like what Indian parents do, right? Like either become an engineer or a doctor.
Yeah.
And if not, after you get the degree, you can decide something else.
Right.
So it was like a rite of passage, basically.
Rite of passage. Yeah. Right. Good point made there, right? I mean, I was also looking up and seen how a lot of people opt for engineering courses or MBA courses because that seemed like a very natural course of action, right?
Yeah.
So either you do an engineering, but even then you end up doing an MBA after that. And even like if you do like anything from the arts or commerce fields, even then you end up doing an MBA, right? So for everyone these days, it's like an MBA which is the ultimate destination, right?
Yes.
And with so many colleges and universities springing up here and there, and so many of them are even being shut down because the quality of students, the quality of
education
teaching
itself
is just,
yeah,
it's abysmal. It's so bad.
Right?
And a lot of them just focus on attendance per se and not really, a lot of it is very theoretical. It's not practical. You cannot, there's no employability there. There's no skill training which is there, right?
Yeah.
Which is also why the Skill India movement was launched in the first place.
It's also why I think such courses are very important, such vocational courses after you get your course, I mean, after you get your degree per se.
Yes. So I think India has a lot to learn from there. Also, I mean, as we all discussed, there are a lot of people opting for engineering and MBA courses still. The number of people who are opting for other more specific technical courses is still very, very low. So it's, I mean, it's the vocational courses market is one which will see a massive labor deficit in the years to come, right? So they're estimating about 41 to 61 million labor deficit in the next coming years, which means one thing, which is that it's just going, the salaries are just going to hike there.
Right.
So I just,
very promising.
It is very promising. Yeah. They should. And I mean, especially with the rise of a lot of new technologies, like even 4G, 5G, all of them coming in, even FRT coming in, the number of courses, which would, I mean, the kind of jobs which will be created with the advent of all these technologies, they're going to be humongous, right? So I think this is one area which like even students and all young professionals aspire, you should really look at.
Yeah, I mean, it's very counterintuitive if you think about it, like an actual degree being less rewarding than a vocational course.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
But that is the course of nature these days, because I mean, a lot of countries, a lot of foreign countries as well, like Sweden and Germany, they had this concept of an apprenticeship. Basically, an apprentice, which is someone who is shadowing one professional, technical professional, and learns everything from that person.
Okay.
Right? So, yeah, just to get a hands-on experience of the work atmosphere. It's very, I think it's still very, what is taught in our universities and colleges still is very, very far removed from what the exact...
What's the reality,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, right. Uh-huh. So I think it's a good area to be looked at, and all you should consider it as a good option.
Interesting. Yes. Well, I had fun today. I learned so much about how vocational courses are even more rewarding than actual degrees.
Right.
I should have done more in my, like back in the day.
You should, definitely should have.
That was not that fun.
And I leave a little scared of probably the upcoming tech. Charting out my facial biometrics and just sending it off to China.
Like Black Mirror season, what season is now?
Season 4, I think, next.
Season 5 will be the real world.
Sure.
That's all for today, folks. Thank you for listening in. Do subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google. See you soon.